Ain't no stopping her, Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrotoke Highway in beautiful Moyock, North Carolina. The website, hemphavenwellness.com. Check out her website. You can order online. Delivery is available same day in some circumstances, or just stop in and visit her. Get yourself a cannabis consultation. If you've ever been interested in the world of CBD and what it can do for you, there is no better person to talk to than Dr. D. You can also call them up, 252-340-3557. And that website is hemphavenwellness.com. Happy New Year, Dr.
Happy
D.
Happy New Year. What a year
and a belated
it was.
Merry
Christmas. Yes. Absolutely. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All of the above.
What's happening?
Happy New Year. We have just experienced the most challenging year ever in cannabis land. Think of all the shows we did over the last year, and every month it was something new and exciting or new and traumatizing, and anything in between.
Yeah.
Apparently a lot of Americans had that same feeling because we just learned that approximately 1 in 3 Americans pre-games with cannabis before their holiday gatherings.
Well, when you're forced to hang out with your family for that long, I suppose it's needed in some cases.
Yeah. We talked last month on our Ask the Expert. We talked about how even the cousin walk, right? The pre-gaming known as cousin walk became mainstream as more people around the Thanksgiving table became, uncloseted, so to speak, right? They came out and said that we are now definitely using cannabis and we're not afraid to talk about it. This particular, there's a study here that just came out. I should say a poll that just came out, and it was sponsored by the Freedom Recovery Center. And they looked at over 1,000 participants, and they said that while alcohol remains the number one way that people cope at 51%, 31% of Americans are now turning to cannabis to pregame before holidays, with 43% of those being our Gen Z and millennial generation. So the trend is turning to the younger generation away from alcohol and more toward cannabis, and we're seeing that trend. And so if you're out there and you were pre-gaming, this is something that you have to, begin to incorporate as part of your holiday tradition, I guess.
Because you won't have a holiday hangover.
No holiday.
Think about
hangover.
Thanksgiving or about Christmas. If your family does a big meal on Christmas, I know mine does a delicious big meal. We go out, we eat Japanese food on Christmas, and we're stuffed. And then I wake up the next morning and I'm feeling groggy because I ate too much.
And alcohol.
And if you add booze to that, it just makes it all the more worse.
Yeah, and then think about the worst family gathering you've ever had. And typically, there was some tempers flaring, usually related to alcohol consumption. Because loose lips and inhibitions drop, and you're free to say whatever you want to say to your relative that may have done you wrong decades ago. So it's it's really becoming an interesting paradigm shift as we look at what cannabis and legislation is moving into the new year. I really am very excited. Mainly because, first of all, our dispensary in North Carolina is just serving our communities with such great education, and individuals are coming in asking wonderful questions. They are really making appointments to talk to all of our cannabis nurses. We're getting follow-up appointments with cannabis clients that have been using our services for years, and we're helping them adjust their treatment plans and using these compounds safely and appropriately. Just yesterday, I've been getting a lot of feedback from WNIS listeners. They're coming in and talking about how they've been listening to the show for years, and they follow the trends and listen to the research that we discuss. And one in particular yesterday, I give credit to Joshua. He came in and had all the right questions to ask and had a particular concern, and we addressed the concern. We knew he knew right away that he was not going to look at a THC-based compound. Because he couldn't. That's where many of our employed are who are still in the workforce. You can't use it yet because it's still considered federally legal, and until we tease that out. So this is where the science is now catching up to the legislation. And nothing was more surprising in that vein than when President Trump signed an executive order on December 18th. And if you weren't paying attention, this was an executive order that rocked the cannabis world. And the two parts to this were kind of, one part was mostly expected. The first part of the executive order requires us to move cannabis from Schedule 1, where it sits currently in the prohibition side. He wants it to be moved to Schedule 3. As I pulled the verbiage of his executive order, it says here, right in the very beginning, the preamble, that it says, according to the executive order, in 2023, the Food and Drug Administration completed a review of the landscape of medical use of marijuana and found scientific support for its use to treat anorexia related to medical condition, nausea, vomiting, and pain. Yet decades of federal drug policy have neglected marijuana's medical uses. And this is where we focus in our dispensary. And of course, cannabis nurses are on board to make sure they're using it appropriately. We also know that cannabis has a currently accepted medical use. Why is that? There have been numerous reports, the most recent one coming out of the Department of Health and Human Services offices of the Assistant Secretary of Health, that was authored by more than 30,000 licensed healthcare practitioners who contributed across 43 United States jurisdictions, as they are authorized to recommend medical marijuana for more than 6 million registered patients. You cannot look at 6 million registered patients and analyze that without coming to some very robust conclusions, some very robust outcomes related to the 15 medical conditions that these 6 million patients were using medical marijuana for. And so the quote here that is going to impel and promote cannabis into its rightful domain as a medicine is that the federal government's long delay in recognizing the medical use of marijuana does not serve the Americans who report health benefits from the medical use of marijuana to ease chronic pain and other various medical recognized ailments. This is how we are now going to be moving into a realm where President Trump's executive order on the first part is moving cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. And mainly, this activity is to increase medical marijuana and cannabidiol, or CBD, research. We've spent many of our prohibitive years, or years in prohibition, looking at it as a drug of abuse. This is, if you remember, we've talked before about how President Biden in 2023 signed into law the Medical Marijuana and Cannabidiol Research Expansion Act. Just since 2023, we've had an explosion of research. But the issue that remains is that cannabis research is still very difficult to conduct in a very empirical way because of the hoops you have to go through. Do you think that we do a lot of research on heroin? No. No one considers heroin at a medicinal value. There's no medical use for heroin at all, but cannabis remains on the same schedule as heroin. So the hoops that you would have to go through to conduct this research are very complex. It takes years just to get approval and years to access actual products that could be useful that are not within the federal government's control. So as we increase the medical marijuana and cannabidiol research, this particular move to Schedule 3 is going to help include real-world evidence and provide the more robust understanding of how these compounds are applied in a clinical setting. To me, this supports everything we have been doing at Hemp Haven for the past 6 years, because we review the research, we understand the compounds, especially the non-intoxicating compounds. Joshua came in and didn't want to use an intoxicating compound, but yet the research that we have, the robust and the empirical evidence we have on what the condition could be served for the non-intoxicating compounds are where the real-world research and applications are coming to. The most exciting thing that Trump's executive order shared was something that no one could have anticipated. Whether you like him or hate him, what comes out of President Trump's mouth is always up for grabs. And the thing that surprised me was that he wants to have Medicare reimburse seniors up to $500 a year for CBD use. This has just created a dynamic for me that is extremely incredible, because of course last year in Virginia I'm considered an illegal dangerous drug dealer for what I do.
What a turnaround.
This year, yeah. With a stroke of a pen, this executive order has indicated that what we are doing in relation to providing safe access, safe use, and real-world empirical support and follow-through with using these compounds as medicine have provided us our next roadmap, so to speak. I look forward to the research coming out. Because now we're going to have many more institutions, not that we haven't had enough already. And what we need to understand, however, is that the Schedule III move, it's not legalizing cannabis. You're not going to be able to go to your 7-Eleven and get it. It is still going to be under the control of your healthcare professionals, your practitioners who are going to be allowed to prescribe it, much in the same way that they would be prescribing you other controlled Schedule III drugs, such as testosterone falls under Schedule III, oxycodone falls under Schedule III. So the first window that has opened under this executive order is that we're looking to bypass the hurdles that the DEA continues to throw at the cannabis industry. They refuse to move it to Schedule III because they like it where it sits at Schedule I. I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but the pharmaceutical, alcohol, and tobacco industry, as well as the healthcare industry, are very reluctant to understand and accept cannabis as a medicinal application. But this is going to turn around with this executive order, because now it is going to open up the research that is going to guide the synthetic development of prescriptions. Let me repeat that. So instead of getting the plant out of your backyard or from a dispensary that is licensed and regulated and has the safety parameters assigned to it, the main winner here in this initial move is going to be the pharmaceutical industry. I look at this as the pharmaceutical industry is going to be the first to jump on board. And we already have evidence that worldwide, the pharmaceutical cannabinoid synthetic industry is already at $2 billion. So we're with a B, $2 billion, with a 4% market growth annually for the next several years. They anticipate that that's going to increase to $2.5 billion. By 2029, just now, 3 short years from now. But the United States leads the global market in cannabis synthetic medications. The United States in 2024's revenues from synthetic cannabinoids was $913 million. This means that you can get prescriptions for cannabis synthetics. They are mainly used for analgesia or pain relief, as President Trump's order has said he wants to see it used for. They're also used for epilepsy and nausea and vomiting. They're used for mental health conditions such as anxiety and depression. The trials that are already undergoing are, let me read a few of these institutions in the United States, at New York State Psychiatric Institute. We've got some research in cannabinoid pharmaceuticals as synthetics at the University of Colorado, Denver, University of Colorado at San Diego. We've got some research being conducted at Yale University and the University of California at Los Angeles, University of Florida. And what we're seeing is that the largest percentage of these newer trials are actually being conducted on the natural compounds. So when you think about how the United States can be invested in this move to the cannabinoids as medicine, it is going to create a huge shift across every federal policy that we have institutionalized in the United States, starting at healthcare, then tease out insurance, including I've already mentioned Medicare. Medicare is going to now be looking at how to reimburse seniors for CBD. Are there going to be any other cannabinoids like cannabigerol that we've talked about, the CBG that is especially effective for neuropathic pain and extreme inflammation? There are other cannabinoids that we're going to be seeing for potentially treating autism, ADD, ADHD. Cancer treatment is going to change. So that's just the healthcare paradigm all by itself. Workers' comp insurance. Now we're going to get into what is workers' comp going to pay for. Employers are going to have to begin reviewing their own employment policies based on insurance changes, based on what is acceptable in that particular industry. I never anticipate that CDL holders or federal contractors, those that hold security clearances, et cetera, I don't anticipate that that type of industry, those types of job positions, are ever going to be allowing a THC component, because, of course, THC being the only compound that creates impairment. I do, however, see that there are going to have to be laws that are going to be, or I should say, employment regulations, even at those levels, the CDL level, potentially, you know, if you hold a security clearance level. You have to question yourself, are there laws or regulations in these types of industries that are allowing those workers to use an opiate? Do they use testosterone? Because those are already approved on Schedule 3. And if we change cannabis to a Schedule 3 drug, you can't discriminate. It's a Schedule 3 drug, meaning it's legal for use under the recommendation and guidance of a healthcare professional. So this is a huge shift in cannabis policy. And as a nurse, of course, cannabis nurses have been recognized since 2023 by the American Nurses Association as the newest subspecialty of nursing. And so, of course, the very same nursing association, the American Nurses Association, has come out in support of Trump's cannabis rescheduling move, saying it could open doors to critical research. Not only has the American Nurses Association come out in support of this rescheduling, the American Association of Nurse Anesthesiology, as well as the American Pharmacists Association, have all come out in support of this move, saying that the move to Schedule 3 will advance public health by expanding access to rigorous research, supporting evidence-informed clinical care, and reinforcing patient safety through regulated study and oversight. I have to look at this move by the administration. None of our healthcare professionals are prepared for this move. So I know that there will be a lot of teasing out, not only at the regulatory level, as I just mentioned, insurance and healthcare organizations are going to have to come to some really work groups to begin understanding how to put these policies that are about to be in place as part of their policies within the organizations. But on the other side of that is the healthcare professionals, like me, have been taught and educated in our healthcare system that marijuana is a drug of abuse. And we have been taught to judge, we have been taught to stigmatize, we have been taught to ignore this as part of a treatment plan. So there is my biggest concern, is that as these regulations begin to roll out across the United States, and knowing that a majority of our population who are using these compounds are the older adults who are also using a majority of the prescription pharmaceuticals, these healthcare professionals need to become quickly educated about drug-drug interactions, about how to begin the process of recommending safe cannabinoids and avoiding outcomes and effects that they don't want to have. And so I'm offering a class again, I'll remind everybody, in January, Cannabis 101. I do a 6-week virtual class. You can find it on our website. And what I try to give everyone in this healthcare professional approach is that you already have the basic understanding needed anatomy and physiology, pharmacology, the drugs, etc. What we need to impart and what we need to get our healthcare community up to date on is how the patients are going to be allowed to A, access these products, that because they are going to be accessible, especially in Virginia, as we turn into medical marijuana land here in Virginia, but B, the complex conditions for which these compounds are being used for have an incredible impact on our patient population. And on our dispensary alone, we're helping either to heal chronic conditions, reduce their severity, and that's just the physical or mental ability of these compounds. But on the other side of that, more and more of our clients are coming to us and asking us to help them transition off their pharmaceuticals. Because while we don't have indication yet, I always say there's always the big question mark, but we have don't have any indications that cannabis combined with pharmaceuticals are going to cause a severe adverse effect. There are some pharmaceuticals that we have to be cautious with, especially when you're thinking anti-anxiety, antidepression, and pain medicine, for which cannabis is used at the highest percentage. So we need to begin thinking ahead of this shift in policy and begin to help our healthcare providers understand this is coming. It is not stopping, and they need to be educated because their patients are going to be coming to them with questions, and they're going to need guidance on how to make recommendations that are safe and appropriate.
She's Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrituck Highway in Moyock, North Carolina. Her website, hemphavenwellness.com, phone number 252-340-3557, and open 7 days a week still, right? So that would be 11 till 7 most of the week, and then Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 11 till 8 at 726 Carrituck Highway. We got more with Dr. D coming up on News Talk 790 WNIS. We are hanging with Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, just below the Virginia border in North Carolina, in Moyock, North Carolina, at 726 Carrituck Highway. You can reach her at 252-340-3557. Website is hemphavenwellness.com. And she joins us on Ask the Expert on the first Thursday of every month, right here on WNIS at 6 p.m. Head to her website to listen to past shows. And then CannabisNurseTruths.com. There's all the podcasts that we did together. HempHavenWellness.com. Dr. D, back with us. What else is on your mind?
So much about
I know.
Cannabis.
That's a loaded question, isn't it?
So much about cannabis. We were in Virginia, of course, last year before we got run out of Virginia as drug dealers.
Yes.
And this is where in North Carolina we're starting to see the trend pick up again, because we were seeing the norm in the United States is basically 52% of individuals aged 40 to 60 years are the majority of medical marijuana users. So take your 40-year-old, your 60-year-old, what are they using it for? They're using it mainly for pain. They're using it mainly for sleep. And when you translate that into the hemp world, this is what we are seeing as well. And this is where, of course, the push for rescheduling is going and the push for CBD to be covered by Medicare. But if you think about how those that don't want to use marijuana and get a medical marijuana card or potentially use an adult form of marijuana, I'm back to my old sticking point. Marijuana has one use. It makes you high. It makes you impaired.
Yeah.
But like alcohol, the state has no problem with selling you alcohol. The
right.
state is not going to have any problem selling you marijuana. Of course, what they don't want is they don't want any hemp products in Virginia. And this is where the shock was. Again, we talked about this at our last show last month.
Competition.
They see hemp as competition. Yeah. And incredibly, when 2018 came around and the Farm Bill was enacted, it was signed by Senator Mitch McConnell and then, of course, enacted by President Trump, who then turned around in November and signed in the new hemp ban. The new hemp laws that have actually created a lot of confusion for these individuals who were using hemp instead of marijuana because they don't want to have that impairing, intoxicating effect.
What is that meant for you guys at Hemp Haven?
We ignored it. And most of the industry has ignored it because, first of all, this hemp ban that was signed in November by the same Senator McConnell that implemented the Farm Bill and then signed by President Trump, I looked at this and most of the vendors looked at it from the same perspective. First of all, we have over a $400 billion industry in hemp. And that's just not the medicinal uses of which we're doing at the dispensary side. This is in agricultural products altogether, the industrial side, the hempcrete, the hemp lumber, the hemp fibers using for fabric and paper, et cetera. So this hemp ban that was created mainly focused, I think, on weeding out the weeding out the bad players because the loopholes that were built into this hemp law in 2018, it was just a sign that the government didn't know what the heck it was doing. It made one particular regulation, and that was related to the Delta 9 concentration of hemp at the dry weight, meaning that once it's been harvested and dried, The regulation was that it could not have any more than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. The hemp ban that was enacted and signed into law, it's going to be revisited again in the end of this month, January, but it is also doesn't go into effect until November of this year, 2026, at which time we anticipate that that's going to change because the law simply changed that concentration percentage. It bumped it up to 0.4%. And that has created the entire hemp industry, completely made it completely illegal, no matter if you're using the CBD that comes out of it, the CBG that comes out of it. It also affects those that are using it for the industrial side. And here's a little poll that was conducted just a few days ago by NUGGMD, which is a cannabis referral platform. This is where you can go to get your cannabis, your marijuana card. So you would think that the marijuana users here that are being surveyed by NUGGMD are all for it, right? They're going, yay, hemp ban. You know, I can get my marijuana card. You know, I have my marijuana card. I might as well go use marijuana. No. 4 in 5 of the marijuana consumers in this particular NUGGMD poll say that they oppose the hemp ban because they realize that they understand that they use marijuana for its intended purposes, to get high. But there is nothing that can compare to using the cannabinoids that we can extract from hemp for which you do not need a medical marijuana card. You only need to be 21 years old or older and live in states where we, like us, age gate it and make sure that it's lab tested. And so that's where I think the regulations are going to go. I think this hemp ban was in effects, all in intents, was a pause. And it really highlighted how the use of things that are related to health in hemp are going to have to be better regulated because right now there are no regulations for this type of product. I recognized that early on. That's why I decided to open Hemp Haven 6 years ago. But I always ask, would you ever go and trust gas station sushi? I would not.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to risk the trips that are going to happen later for
No,
that.
I want sushi made by someone who knows what they're doing.
That's exactly right. You want a sushi chef for that.
That's right.
Same thing with gas station hemp products. This loophole that was incepted in 2018 under the Farm Bill, it only gave one parameter. And because the federal government is ignorant about the science and the evidence behind what we can do with hemp itself, they really missed the ball. Did they ask for our guidance? Did they ask for our recommendations? Oh, heck no. They just made one standard, you know, regulation to rule them all, and the bad players showed up. So this is none more apparent than this executive order that I'll go back to with President Trump. He wants now CBD coming from hemp to be covered under Medicare. So the big question is, can you get CBD without THC? The answer is no. It all comes from the same plant. So if you ban the plant, you're not getting anything out of it. You're going to have to really become, you're splitting the baby, so to speak. You're splitting, understanding that all 150 compounds come from the hemp plant. Right. What I'm anticipating is that we will more than likely, with this highlight of the ban that was really focused on the bad players and safety issues, we are going to want to see, first of all, lab testing, making sure that what is in the product is safe to be consumed by humans, safe consumption. Then we're going to see age gating, because, of course, we don't want our adolescents and our youth to have access to it. Here is, again, another study that just came out. Actually, it was called, it was the end of the year monitoring the future study that was supported by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And what it looked at is the teen use of substances. And in this case, it focused on marijuana use. And according to Dr. Nora Volkow, who is the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, teen use has remained stable even as more states across the United States legalize marijuana. And that is because the marijuana dispensaries that are state controlled, what are they doing? They're using the same type of model that they use for alcohol. You have to card these people. Right. You have to card these people. I watched with such glee. I watched Trump in his Oval Office on December 18th when he was discussing this executive order, and Dr. Volkow was right there by his side. And while she has been the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse for several decades, she has always been a strong supporter of cannabis as a medical approach when it is used appropriately and safely. So I think with this this focus on public health, we definitely do not want to see our teens and our adolescents have access to it. What also is encouraging to me, so while the 8th, 10th, and 12th graders that participated in this survey, they are at 7%, 15%, and 25% respectively using or reportedly using marijuana over the last year. This is the lowest rate since 1992. We have had a lot of medical marijuana and really legal dispensaries in some states. Virginia soon to join that group. We have had a lot of states legalize access to marijuana since 1992, but yet we are not seeing the data that suggests teens have access to it in greater numbers. You know what teens have access to? Illicit cannabis.
Yes.
The cannabis you buy in the dark alley. You don't know where it came from. You don't know if it could be laced with something. So this is where it's a very exciting time for even Dr. Volkow from the National Institute on Drug Abuse to support this move to Schedule 3, because we definitely do not want to create more harm. Our model in cannabis as medicine is harm reduction. No more harms than what we would consider as we have used a pharmaceutical model, and making sure that we don't have fatalities, you don't have extreme abusive possibilities. And this is, again, where we are seeing how medical marijuana is prevalent among people with disabilities. Segueing into another study. This study came out, again, from another national survey, as the surveys are ending their year and collecting their data and publishing it as they accumulate and aggregate it. This came out from the National Survey on Health and Disability, and it was conducted at George Mason University and the University of Nevada, and published in the Disability and Health Journal in November 2025. And what this particular study found is that marijuana has therapeutic benefits for adults with disabilities and is commonly used to manage pain and other symptoms. Basically, they found that it was related mainly with 70% of these medical marijuana disability users reporting relief of pain and helping to help relieve tension and anxiety, nausea, migraines, muscle spasms, seizures, and sleep disturbances. And this was from a population of almost 2,000 people who identified as they themselves had these types of disabilities and reported on the many ways that medical marijuana could help with these conditions. These are the types of individuals who are, first of all, they're very vulnerable. They're disabled in some conditions that create a very unique medical or health condition that would in if you looked at it overall, it would preclude them from using something like medical marijuana that could potentially be harmful related to its impairing qualities. But yet, when they're using it appropriately and they're using it with the dosages, they're using it with the parameters and the ratios of the cannabinoids that are available, these individuals are finally having a quality of life that they weren't getting when they were using the pharmaceuticals prescribed to them by their healthcare providers. Again, more evidence from a very vulnerable population that when we provide the guidance, when we use the research, it adds the robust evidence that's needed for Trump to say Schedule 3 is more appropriate. While this is where we have a long way to go to completely deschedule it, remove it from the schedules altogether where you'll be able to grow it and go to a 7-Eleven to buy it, I don't see that happening in any time in the near future. I do see this Schedule 3 as a first step, and the first step is going to be a very long step. The move is going to take at least a year, if not 2 years, to tease out all of the threads, so to speak, that have been embedded in federal regulations, teasing on down to state regulations. Think of defense, think of law enforcement, think of the judicial system, think of schools, etc. But we do know that the trend is moving in that direction. I'll throw another one at you. Here is another study that was just completed, and it was published in December in the journal Frontiers in Nutrition, in which they assessed 80 elite Canadian athletes across 27 national sport organizations. We've already talked about on this program how in the United States, numerous organizations, sports organizations, have already completely removed THC from their testing parameters. Even the NCAA at the college level had realized this is ridiculous. You know, all of our athletes are testing positive for THC in states where it is legal. But in this particular study in Canada, they looked at professional athletes who were elite athletes. These are your marathon runners. These are your, you know, your bicycle level, you know, your Tour de France level type like athletes. And they found these athletes are using not THC, because according to the World Anti-Doping Agency regulations, world-class athletes are not allowed to use THC. That allows them, however, to move to the next cannabinoid, and that's where Trump has moved for the Medicare coverage, they're using CBD. And according to this study, CBD provides pain relief, improves sleep, and aids relaxation. That is the Olympic athletes' boon, right? This is their problem. They
and
have
presumably recovery from
recovery as well. Yeah. Compounds, these cannabis compounds help them recover. So while they're worried that if they use the THC side of the cannabis compound to treat this, of course THC can provide pain relief, improve sleep, creates great relaxation. Everybody who uses that knows that. The downfall to that is the same downfall in every industry that is susceptible to drug testing. You do not want to risk your world-class, you know, number one, first in best in show, first in across the finish line with a positive drug test. But these athletes are looking to CBD for these same effects. And according to this study, A third of them are using, over a third of them, 38% of them are using CBD to improve pain, sleep, and help relaxation. This is where the World Anti-Doping Agency is going to have to, again, look at their parameters. We do know that CBD will not give them an edge, but we also have to recognize that this is a non-impairing, non-intoxicating compound that can help with recovery. And think of the most intense athletes you know, elite athletes you know. They have a lot of anxiety, and they're at high risk of injuries, and they need quality sleep. So this is where we're back to the regulations that need to be implemented. I'm pretty sure that elite athletes are not buying their CBD at the gas stations.
No.
No, because that's where you'll get untested, potentially unsafe products that could be, even though it says THC-free, they still could be laced with THC. And so we're back to, we need regulations. When we look at the very top tier here, the Olympic elite athletes, those that are using the CBD, then look at the population I just mentioned before, the disability population. Neither of these populations should be using products that are unsafe. I'm going to touch here as we finish our last few moments here with one more report that came out again at the end of the year, because we are now looking at the National Bureau of Economic Research. And this particular study looked at the suicide rates for older adults. Think of the older adults who are absolutely using a lot of medications for a lot of different purposes. Many are using medications to treat pain, neuropathic pain, anxiety, depression, and many, we see this in our dispensary all the time, many of our older adult populations are using so many products for sleep. Think of what sleep can do, you know, sleep medications can do to an older person. All of them, if you read the package inserts on any of the drugs, so I encourage you to read your package inserts, the long list of adverse effects, I would be willing to bet that a majority of them say risk for suicide. And especially true of anti-anxieties, antidepressants, and sedatives, those that help, and hypnotics, those that help with sleeping disorders. So this particular research that came out from the Bureau of Economic Research said that legal marijuana access reduces suicide rates for older adults. This says that it's not so much the use. So we still have states where you cannot access legal marijuana. But they did find that in states where you have access to recreational adult use cannabis dispensaries, those suicide rates for adults aged 45 and older declined. And this was strongest as an effect in men. In men who are typically more likely to hold in their anxiety, not discuss their depression, have poor sleep quality. They know they're in pain, especially those that are maybe associated with military service or some type of mechanical or laborious service. Men significantly across the board always have higher suicide rates than women. And they are the most benefiting because they are now able to use medical marijuana and adult recreational marijuana in states that have it legalized, and now their suicide rates are dropping. Opponents would say, well, there's confounding variables. They looked at this. First of all, they found that, A, using access or having access to legal adult-use recreational marijuana did not increase suicides. So we can kind of put that behind us. We're not creating more suicidal risk by using this or having access to it. But the other confounding variables that they teased out of these numbers, they looked at beer, they looked at cigarettes, and they also looked at opioids, prescriptions, pill mills, and drug monitoring programs, because this is where all of these kind of lump together, alcohol, tobacco, pills, opioids, pain management, These are all the individuals who were more than likely at risk for suicides because after going through years and decades of alcohol, pills, tobacco, and nothing has changed, well, there you go. So this is the research coming out that we are going to see an incredible shift in the cannabis paradigm. And at Hemp Haven, we feel very fortunate and very grateful that we've been able to serve our communities first by educating and providing the evidence and guidance necessary to keep people safe, to keep those who want to have the choice to use it safe, while at the same time, we now have, I don't have as much fear that I'm going to go to jail anymore or fined into oblivion like Virginia did to me last year, because the paradigm has now been burst wide open. And the spotlight on these compounds to support and provide health and wellness is the future is much brighter because of that. And so everyone in America is now going to be able to understand that cannabis is not the demon that the federal government has told us it was for almost 80 years.
She's Dr. Denise Foster. She knows her stuff from Hemp Haven Wellness, just below the Virginia border in Moyock, North Carolina, 726 Carrotoke Highway. Visit her online at hemphavenwellness.com or in person, get yourself a free cannabis consultation. She's open 7 days a week. And then, of course, there's the Cannabis 101 series, a cannabis nurse lecture series that's coming up starting later this month. All the details on the website, hemphavenwellness.com. And Dr. D is with us on WNIS on the first Thursday of every month. She'll be back here Thursday, February 5th at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening. And Dr. D, thanks for hanging out with us.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.